Okay, everybody, we decided to take this week off, so here's one of our classic episodes. Hope you enjoy. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the latest episode of All Too Real 2. My name is Michael E. Collin II, and with me, as always, via Zoom is...
Matthew Noel Haas.
So that'd be like Matthew Christmas.
Yeah, I actually like that name. Matthew Christmas. Do a Christmas album?
Yes.
How Matthew Christmas presents... Presents, like presents?
Yes.
Ooh, I like that, yeah.
Matthew Christmas presents, Deadly Games. And, so...
Yeah.
So, as it is that time of year again, folks, I would like to remind you that we must not listen to all of Christmas music and do what it says. Because, I mean, the song says, have a cup of cheer. That does not mean to go down to your local Walmart, buy some cheer laundry detergent and drink it, or bring it to your next holiday party and share it with your friends.
No, it does not.
Yes.
No, it does not.
That's dangerous. We don't want no cheer challenges going on now.
Oh, now you just created it by saying that.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so, uh-oh.
Okay, all you kids out there on the Instagrams and the Tixie Toxies and all that stuff, don't be doing any challenges. And if you're on the books, you know, on the Facebooks.
The books. Yeah. Don't do no challenges.
No challenges.
Nope, don't do it.
No cheer challenge.
Nope. I actually like the sound. I like the way the word sounds. Cheer. I know it's a bad thing, but yeah. I like
Well, here's a cheer challenge for you. Go out there and spread joy to all your friends. And now I'm not talking about the dishes.
I was like, wait a minute.
Don't go out there and, you know, spray dish soap all over your friends like you or want to do, you know.
Well, that's at least not as harmful as drinking it, spraying it. Well, really, yeah, harmful.
Spreading joy is not as bad as drinking cheer.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, you'll get all soapy and stuff, but
yeah,
it's not as bad as, you know, drinking detergent. So
yeah,
you know, yeah.
And I have seen that if you take like Dawn dish soap, you can clean up ducks with it somehow.
That's like one of the oldest commercial states. They've been doing that same commercial since I was a little kid. Like. We clean ducks from oil spills or whatever. I'm like, that's cool, I guess, but really?
Yeah, I guess so.
Whatever.
So anyway.
It's all Dawn that can do it. No other soap can do it. Only Dawn soap can do it.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
Trying to let you know that it's so gentle that it can clean a duck, but it's abrasive enough to clean that grease off of your dirty pans.
Yeah, you know, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So joy does not spread joy in the duck. It's too rough. So,
but I will tell you right now, if Joy or Dawn or Cheer would like to sponsor our podcast, I'd be more than happy to let you. And I talk about the greatness of Joy and Dawn and Cheer.
Yeah.
Or Palmolive or Tide.
Ooh, Tide. Yeah.
Yes. As long as we're not eating Tide Pods like the kids want to do, you know, I can't believe it. My generation, we used to just, you know, do this and that. We didn't eat those Tide Pods.
Wow.
Yeah, people in this generation, that the kids are not eating Tide Pods. Maybe one or two are that you might know. I don't know. But I'm just saying, we're not going to generalize a whole group of people based on the fact that a couple eat Tide Pods.
Yeah. And, you know, if you do eat Tide Pods, you're probably going to have a fever dream, which leads us into this movie.
Yes.
That a fever dream of a film.
Yes, the fever dream of a film that we are covering today is a film. I'll just start out with the basic premise of this. There's a kid who's kind of left home alone. And then he's defending his home from an invader. Sounds a lot like a Christopher Columbus classic Home Alone that came out in 1990. This is a French film that came out in 1989 called 3615 Code for Pierre Noël, also known as Deadly Games, or Dial Code for Santa Claus, or Game Over, or Hide and Freak. It has more names than P. Diddy.
Yeah.
Yes, I made a really bad joke there. I'm sorry, folks. So,
it's not a bad branding to name a movie so many titles. Like, stick with one, and because you're going to be confusing people, because someone might think Game Over is a different movie than Deadly Games or Dial Code Santa Claus or Hide and Freak. Honestly, sounds like a horror film. Yeah. Like a slasher, not what this movie is.
No. My personal favorite, I like Deadly Games Dial Code Santa Claus, which is what the director calls it in his English translation for it. So, because that makes sense, because this movie is one fucked up movie. It starts out as like a nice little Christmas movie and then goes into this weird thing where it's like Home Alone meets Die Hard meets Halloween meets Friday the 13th meets Black Christmas meets that dream I had that one time when I went to the doctor and they gave me these pain meds that really made me kind of loopy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Good old pain meds, man.
Yes.
They really can fuck with your dreams.
Or the time when I was like really depressed and went to the hospital and they gave me some kind of stuff for my anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And I went out to dinner and don't remember any of it. And I guess I was acting really weird. So yeah,
probably like Ativan or like what was really popular one back in the day. I can't think of.
Yeah, I'm not sure what it was, but I just know I went out to eat with my dad and his girlfriend at the time, and I guess I was reading things from the newspaper to them and being really funny to the waitress and all this other stuff, and I don't remember any of it.
Well, so, it could have been Valium. Sorry, Valium was like the really hardcore one.
Yeah,
back,
no,
like.
I've never been at Valium, I'm pretty sure. But yeah.
It's what it is. It feels like one of those kind of dreams. And it was very subtle shift of like the movie kind of changing tone, but then it was like subtle at first, but then it just got changed all at once.
It ramped up fast. It was like zero to 90.
The beginning of the film is like, it's like shows the kid, he's like really into like making contraptions. He's like really smart, like strategist, you know, for like combat. He's always wearing like, you know, war paint on his face.
Yeah, he looks like Rambo or something.
Yeah, so he like playing with his dog, like he's got his dog like with like a tracker on it. He like lures him into a trap where he has like a floor that like a trap door and like in the floor and there's like a net, you know, underneath it. And then like, you know, it's like, oh, it's kind of funny, you know, like he's like really into computers too. Like he's basically like a boy genius. Kind of
yeah, he's like a child prodigy who like likes to create contraptions and things like that, and he also lives in this mansion that's just like insane.
Yeah. it's a huge ass. I think it's because his family owned this mall. I don't know if his mom inherited it or she started. I think it was more of like a family, like dynasty kind of business, like a, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like some kind of shopping center that she owns of some or something.
Like a really big mall, like really big. And like, so that's like the beginning, right? It's like him going through like his morning, like, you know, his grandpa lives with him. He's got like diabetes, almost blind. And so like, he's supposed to kind of like help take care of them and stuff like that while she goes to the store. And, you know, so it's like nice little family movie, you know, kids
bad
take
parenting.
Care of him.
I'm sorry.
What that?
Bad parenting.
The bad parenting, you know, yeah. She's like, oh, go ahead, take care of your grandpa. You're 10. Wait, what?
Yeah.
And like, take sure he
takes care of your grandpa who can't see at all.
Right. And it's like, we're rich, so technically we could hire like a live-in helper, you know, or whatever. Yeah. Well, technically, I think they did have a caretaker. But like whatever.
Yeah, there was a caretaker of the grounds, but they lived in a different house that was on the grounds.
Oh.
So yeah, like this couple.
Oh, they were groundkeepers.
Yeah, like basically okay. They were like the land caretakers. So
wow. And then so that's like the nice little beginning. Like they're playing like some kind of like American rock music or something like with English lyrics, which is weird because a lot of the music in here were the lyrics from English.
Yeah.
But the that's some weird overall. I don't know if that was intentional just to make it more surreal, probably.
Well, I think it was actually just true to form because I mean, there are a lot of, you know, local language songs in countries like France and stuff like that. But a lot of times the American music infiltrates most communities. And so people know, like, that don't speak English at all, like, know all the words to a Madonna song or something, you know?
Oh, yeah, because you listen to it so often. Yeah. Yeah. So then that's, like, the cool beginning. The shift starts to happen. It's very subtle. But so this dude, I guess it's implied that he's homeless. I don't know. He didn't look homeless to me. He had, like, a nice scarf on and stuff. Maybe he could have gotten somewhere.
Yeah.
And he's just walking down the street and they're, you know, these kids are playing, you know, having a snowball fight. And, you know, he kind of smiles because, you know, he's like, you know, enjoying the moment. Like, you know, these kids are having fun and they're gleeful and, you know, they're full of joy. Maybe it reminds him when he was younger, that maybe he was happy or whatever. So he just, you know, innocently just decides to join, you know, the snowball fight. He just gets a little ball, you know, it's not like too hard and he kind of throws it and all the kids just run away from him. And then he just looks really sad. Like, oh, I was just wanted to, you know, participate. You know, so, you know, you start kind of feeling sorry for him for a little bit because he did nothing wrong. He just got to throw a little snowball. he's walking by, you know, but then you don't feel sorry for him a few minutes later because he decides to apply for a job to be a mall Santa for Christmas Eve. And he does something really weird where he just starts stroking this kid's cheek for like 30 straight seconds.
And it makes you wonder if there's like some kind of backstory there that they didn't give us. Like maybe he lost a daughter or a son or something. And
I don't know. I'm starting to wonder if he's maybe like a pedophile. I don't know what you're going for here. Because when all the kids ran away from him, that maybe was like stranger danger type.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know, but that's what the vibe I was getting. Because like then you go from that to him like literally just like inappropriately stroking this kid's face. Like,
yeah. Because like, we have a scene in there too with Thomas. He's our little boy in this movie. The little prodigy. He uses a computer that he has to try to communicate with Santa Claus, and he makes contact with this like local derelict. And he's using some kind of, there's like a public terminal computer. I didn't know they had those things, but I guess they did.
Yeah, 89, they had internet in France apparently.
Yeah. Was this before or after Al Gore invented it?
Yeah, it's the algorithm. Yeah.
So they this guy interferes and pretends to be Santa Claus to the kid online and basically gets the kid's address from him.
Oh my god, I know, it's so. And like his friend was like warning him, like, don't, what was the word he said? This might be a kinky message board, like,
yeah,
don't,
something don't, like that, yeah.
Like, don't talk to him. And he's like, no, it's definitely Santa Claus. I'm like, dude, you're an idiot. Like, it's like, yeah, you're a prodigy, but at the same time, you're a moron. Because, like, even your friend, who's kind of like a dunderhead, is, like, telling you not to talk to this rando online.
That's the thing. There are a lot of people out there who are really book smart but have no common sense.
Yeah, apparently he's one of them. And, yeah. He just talked to some random, well, dude, anyone, really, could have been anyone. And, yeah. The kiosk, and then, like, it was weird because he had to pay quarters into it. Like, I guess the minutes would run out. So he's like,
yeah, because it's like a public terminal that you have to pay for or something. I guess they used to have these in places. I remember I was looking into it. Like, there used to be like a lot of places, like they were kind of like now we have like these internet cafes and stuff where you can go in and pay and stuff. But I guess they had things like that too, like in the past where you would pay to use a computer even before the internet. Like, I don't know. Like, you know, you'd go on campuses and stuff and you could pay like $5 for an hour to play on the computer or something, you know? So, yeah. But yeah, so what happens after this guy strokes this kid's face?
God, so awkward. And the kid says, like, I don't like your face. And he's like, well, he says something else. And then the guy slapped the kid in the face.
Yeah.
And then that's when Thomas's mom was just walking by right when that happened. So she fired him on the spot, and then he was supposed to go to, like, I guess HR to collect his paycheck or whatever or something. And so he goes down there to, like, talk to, like, the guy who's also, like, her boyfriend, I think. And he's, like, on the phone with someone else. The guy, like, I think overhears stuff about Thomas or whatever, like, the gifts, like, the presents are going to be delivered to the house or whatever. So he walks out and basically decides he's going to go to that house and try to, like... See, that's what's weird about this movie. So, like, we're led to believe, I guess, that, like, he's there to harm and or kill Thomas. But, like, later on in the movie, like, Thomas eventually, quote, like, wins. No, like, the Santa Claus guy catches him, but then he releases him. And now he wants to be the person who's hiding. So it's almost like it's a game to him in some way.
Yeah. That's why,
like, it's very bizarre. Like,
I think this guy's like just like got some mental issues. You know, it's more than anything. You know what I mean?
Oh,
yeah. I mean, obviously trying to kill people, but
well, yeah, he wants to kill, but he kind of wants to keep the game going at the same time. I really do think that my theory is a little bit right about the child thing, because like he at some points he almost has like a childlike demeanor, like, and like at one point, like, Thomas like puts like a fake grenade onto like a toy train, like a music box thing, and the guy's like smiling at it and he's like holding it up to his face and like almost like what a little kid would do, you know? So like I wonder,
yeah,
there's something going on, like, you know what I mean, like if he's small thinks of himself as like a child baby in some weird way.
So what I want to say now is the Rob Zombie remake of this, where we get to the backstory of the Santa Claus guy.
Exactly. Yeah, I want to make sure that we. So anyway, so the guy he like goes and kills the dude. I think he got the van where the presents were supposed to be delivered.
Yeah, he's hiding in the back of the van with the presents, and then gets to the mansion. And when the guy goes to the back to get the presents out, he kills him in a whole like Michael Myers sort of style.
Yeah, like you're like choking sounds and stuff.
Yeah, and I mean the whole like hiding in the back of a car and stuff is something that Michael Myers would do. So
yeah,
I don't know. It's funny. And then so the thing is he didn't even really need Thomas's address because he could just
well, yeah, he already knew it. So I don't know. Maybe he just needed a ride to get
yeah,
there,
basically. So. You know? But yeah, he kills the caretakers too.
That's right. So my question is, did he know like who Thomas was before, or was that just some random address he got, but then he put two and two together?
They never really explained.
I was just wondering if he like, would he just randomly try to get some kid's address at first before he even knew like plan? Like, because that would be an extra layer of creepiness right there.
If he just maybe he was just messing with the kid and then and maybe thinking that, oh, I can go steal something in this house because I'm, you know, the kid will be home alone trying to, you know, get, because the kid also, the other thing too is he set up the kid's really obsessed with Santa Claus, and he set up a security camera system in the house where he's got like an armband with a like monitor on it where he can see the different cameras in the house in 1989.
Right, well they were rich, so like afford all the craze.
I guess so. Plus he's a genius, so.
Right. Oh, it reminds me of the whole Santa obsession. This makes it even darker with the whole like he actually thinks that Santa Claus tried to kill him.
Yeah,
like that's what makes it so much more sad.
That's like, I mean, because if you're a kid obsessed with anything, I mean, like if you're a kid who like was watching Paw Patrol and believed that those dogs were real, and then a dog that was wearing a police officer outfit came into your house and you thought it was, you know, Chase from Paw Patrol, and then all of a sudden the dog started killing you. That'd be fucked up.
You actually think it's that dog? Yeah. So yeah. Like I remember when they were at breakfast and he was like. Sort of having his doubts about Santa Claus, and his mom said, don't look for Santa, because Santa, if you stay out, Santa turns into an ogre or something like that. You know, like if you try to stay up and watch him come down a chimney or whatever.
Yeah.
So like, he sitting there thinks it's his fault because he stayed up. And like, so like, he thinks it's like his responsibility. And he's like, at one point, he's like, I just wanted to see you, and this is what you've done to me and my. Wow.
Before that, there was like a really creepy scene too with Santa Claus, where he finds some kind of white like spray paint and spray paints all of his hair because he's got like a darker hair to make himself look more like Santa.
That was really weird.
And just the filming of that was weird. Like he's just got this big smile on his face while he's spray painting his beard and shit, and it's just like so creepy.
This guy was played such a great creep. I mean, like the acting of this guy was just like chef's kiss, like beautiful. Like,
yes.
Yeah. You know? Like he played that role. So he goes there, kills the caretakers, kills the driver, then he kills the dog, family dog. Yep, that happened. Dog went to try to protect Thomas. There was like a knife for a fork or something on the table.
Yeah, and it stabs the dog in the throat. Oh my god, that was creepy.
I hate it when they kill dogs in movies.
And, like right in front of the kid too.
Yeah, he's hiding underneath mm-hmm. the table. And then so like he's like has to like basically like forget that for the moment just to survive. So he's kinda like just suppress that emotions that
yeah.
At one point though, there's like this scene where like he finally has like a little minute to think or whatever. And he's like having all these flashbacks of him playing with the dog and doing all these contraptions with them. I'm like, don't. They're so playing crazy. Like this weird like crystal, like Happy Christmas to you or whatever.
What else happens here in this wonderful movie, Matt?
Well, the contraptions progressively get more violent as Santa Claus gets more violent. And at one point, he starts like shooting like darts at his neck, and he creates like a basically like a smoke bomb. Essentially, he puts a gunpowder in a fake grenade. He puts it in like this toy train, but the guy sent it back like he had known, I guess, that kid was there, I don't know, or something like that, and that he thought, oh yeah, because at one point he hides his grandpa in like this like old toy room with like a bunch of old like part of the mansion. It's just like a room dedicated to like old toys. Like at one point,
yeah, and he has like these secret passages, one that looks like a refrigerator and one that looks like a wardrobe.
It's just insane. Yeah, like how much work he's put into like changing his house. It's like a weird
And he says that this is, and his grandpa asks where they are when he's trying to hide his grandpa. And he says, this is my secret place that mom doesn't even know about. And I'm like,
what?
How does she not know about this?
It's a big mansion, so, you know.
Yeah.
Working all the time, so maybe she doesn't even know.
I guess that makes sense, because like I had a friend who lived like there's like these mansions in the old west end of Toledo, which is an area we have here, and these like really old historic mansions. And when I was in high school, my friend John lived in one of those, and he had lived there for a few years at that point. And he was showing me around the house, and we went down to the basement, and I was like, what's that over there? And he's like, I don't know. And we found this whole other room that he never knew existed.
Oh, wow.
So it was just weird.
So he's sitting there riding like a pony, you know, like one of those, what do you call them? Like
rocking horse.
Pony with the spring or whatever.
Well, it's like a spring one, not like a rocking horse, but kind of like
they're
one.
Talking to his grandpa. It's just a bizarre scene. And then, but then the guy eventually finds him. So then he puts his grandfather's pretty genius idea, puts him in a knight suit, has him hide inside of the armor.
Yeah.
That was pretty unique. But then he thought the Santa was sending the train bomb for his armor. I don't think he knew the guy was in there thinking.
No, he was just sending it off towards where he thought the kid was.
So then he runs out, you know, to try to stop it. So then you know, the Santa guy knows that out, kind of grabs him or whatever, I think. And then at one point, he stabs him or cuts him with a knife, I think.
He like stabs him in the leg.
Yeah. He's running down the stairs, and then, you know, his grandfather, like the poor guy, like he can't do anything to protect his like 10-year-old grandson.
I know.
So he's just watching all this go on, and he can't get about it because he's like almost completely blind, diabetic, you know, weak and stuff like that. And, meanwhile, his mom has been trying to call the house this whole time, and she's worried that something's wrong, you know, because nobody's answering the phone. And then she decides to leave work early, and then uses like her car phone. Back then, you know, maybe some of our younger audience might not realize this, but back then they actually used to build, like, usually for people who had like a lot of money or whatever, they actually built a phone inside the car, then you could make phone calls. I'm not sure how it worked out, how you'd be able to get a reception. Maybe they had like
it was through the antenna on the there's like an antenna on the car and stuff.
It was an early cell phone.
So yeah.
Which, you know, you think about it, that really should have been a part of all cars when it was actually made available, just in case you got into like an emergency situation or whatever.
Yeah, but it was like economically prohibitive though, you know, because I'm pretty sure that they were expensive.
So anyway, since she's calling, you know, from there, and she gets into it, she slips on the ice or something, and ends up like almost crashing off like a hill or cliff or whatever. And her boyfriend, who also works at, I think he works as like an accountant at the mall or whatever, he's also trying to call the house, and he eventually leaves because he got a fax from Thomas saying, "Help me, Santa, trying to kill me or kill."
It says, "Help, Santa Claus is attacking me, attacking my grandpa and me." I have a picture of it right in front of me. So
it's like, what the fuck? So then he's like, what the hell? So he goes, leaves, and he ends up finding the car, you know, so he ends up saving, I forgot her name. What's her name? Julia?
Yeah.
He ends up saving her, and then they're driving to the house or whatever. At one point, Thomas gets a message out to his friend, and his friend rides his bike over, but then just as he's about to enter the house, the Santa guy is like, about to kill Thomas, and Thomas tells him to run away. So then this really suspenseful scene where he gets on his bike, and the Santa's running after him, it looks like he's gonna end up catching up with kid, but then right at that moment, a car drives by, and then he's, you know, the kid's far enough away now, get away from him. And again, the Santa guy has this like weird look of sadness on his face where it's almost like he doesn't really want to kill the kids. It's like he wishes he was one still, or he thinks it's like a game. It's a really bizarre.
Yeah, it's like he doesn't want to. It's like he wants to hurt the kid, and maybe, but not really. But he likes the game. But it's also, it's just so weird. You don't know what his motivations are, because like he was fine killing the delivery dude and the caretaker and the dog.
Right, but not the kids though. It's just a weird, it's a very bizarre thing going on with this guy. So like at one point, do another really suspenseful scene. Him and his grandpa get to the car, the garage that they had been working on, but it won't start.
Yeah,
and like the guy's just very Michael Myers, is just standing there for like a whole minute, then he just starts walking towards the car, you know.
It's like that's the thing that's weird about this. Okay, and so I mean, even to a lesser extent, like Michael Myers and the Halloween movies and stuff like that, is how slow the guy is. There are so many times that I don't know what it was. It was like I think that Thomas could have got away, but he didn't.
Yeah, exactly. Like he walks very deliberately and slowly, kind of. Plus, too, he gets hurt a lot of times. You know, so he's injured. And
I mean, there's also a point too where his friend shows up on his bike. Thomas's little friend.
Yeah.
And the fucking Santa Claus guy chases him through the woods or something.
Yeah, now suddenly he's super fast. It's like, yeah. It's just weird. And plus, too, riding your bike in the snow, I mean, it's dangerous and it's, you don't really get.
I mean, he falls down a couple times. It's just, yeah.
That's what scared me. I'm like, he's going to fall on his bike. You know, and then, sure enough, he does. And then there's just this, like, in the music they play. Oh, the music. I love, like, it's definitely like a Korg synthesizer, I'm almost certain, is just one of this. Because it's, you know, they probably didn't have a huge budget, and a Korg. Korg was expensive back then, but not as expensive as hiring like professional like orchestras or whatever, you know. So like, but it had like this really extra layer of suspense to it because the music's just great. I really hope that like they made a soundtrack where you could just listen to the music they had.
Yeah,
because like the original score, oh man, like it's great. And like and then like the songs they have in between, like the English songs, like the Christmas one where he's having all these flashbacks of his dog, and then at one point he's like holding the dog like in his hand, like carrying, burying him and stuff.
Yeah, the music in the film, like, the music in the film was done by somebody named Jean-Félix Lalanne. So we get towards the end here, and so Julie is concerned over her calls not getting through. She phones the police, who send over an officer to the mansion, check on Thomas, and then the vagrant murders the policeman.
They only sent one cop. Like, yeah. What? Like,
but, I mean, they didn't know what was up. It was just basically a welfare check on the kid, so you don't really... But you think they would at least have a partner.
Yeah, backup, you know? Yeah.
But so the vagrant, the vagrant Santa Claus guy, he captures Thomas again. And but then because so he had to, at one point there was like this really suspenseful thing because his grandpa was dying.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And he needed to get his insulin, and he goes all the way to the caretaker's house, it looked like, or something, to get this insulin. He finally gets it. At that point, I don't know, this movie's so fucked up. So to defend his grandpa and combat the trespasser who has cut the telephone lines and trashed the only car, the man at one point catches Thomas, but then immediately releases him while declaring, "I win, you lose. Now I'll go hide myself and you'll be okay. Be it, okay?"
Right, like it's like a game. Like it's like he could have killed him right then and there.
I mean, why didn't he?
But then it's a game. I don't think he actually had any motivation other than playing this weird game, but also he was mad at the kid's mom because he just got fired after like one day at work. It was just a mixed bag of motivations.
Yeah, I mean, plus, at least like in All Alone, the Wet Bandits had motivation to like just rob the place. You know, it's like
exactly. But of course, like we said, the backstory is going to be that Marv had cancer and they needed to afford, you know, the chemo and stuff like that. And,
yeah,
you know, we're gonna see that Home Alone 7. It's gonna be, you know. Can't believe it's all movies.
So he manages to get the insulin to help his grandpa at the end, and so the vagrant has like the police officer's gun at one point, and then so does and then Thomas gets it at one point, and then the grandfather wakes up and he has the gun and he shoots the vagrant, and Julie and her boyfriend arrive at the house, and I'm sorry, this movie is so fucked. They find a stunned Thomas standing over the killer's body, like stammering and saying, "It's my fault, Mom. I wanted to see Santa."
I know, I'm so sick. And then, like, they start playing what she said to him with like a bunch of echo over, like,
yeah,
it's going to turn into an ogre if you look for him and all the stuff. And that's the movie just ends like that.
And there's some sad music playing, and it's just so fucked up.
The resolution, that's the ending, and then it plays that weird Christmas song, right? Almost like the director was like trolling a little bit. Like, I don't know if he, like, it just almost seems like he was having a little bit of fun with it. Like,
yeah.
You know?
Do you want me to read you some, reviews from the Internet Movie Database here, Matt?
Please do.
Okay. Here's a 9 out of 10 from Joseph M. Papp. This is from December 26th of 2020. WTF? Question mark. This movie turns on a dime and it's epic. The movie has an edge I didn't expect. Thomas comes off as very smart but naive. When the horror hits, he definitely comes into his own. The Santa is brutal, disturbing, and psychotic. I expected something a little more lighthearted, but this is genuinely tense. I'm shocked and pleased with the film. Great editing, good music, and fun Christmas horror. 10 out of 10. One of the best Santa slashers ever by R. Collins 20. And this was written just a few days ago as we recorded this on November 18th of 2021.
Oh, wow.
This is a must-see for any fan of the Santa slasher subgenre. Filmed in France, this movie basically did the whole Home Alone thing first, as it was released in 1989, while the first Home Alone film was released in 1990. In it, a little boy must defend his home on Christmas Eve from a deranged killer dressed up as Santa Claus. Patrick Florsheim, Florsheim, stars as the maniacal Kris Kringle and is truly unforgettable. Kris Kringle, and truly unforgettable, bringing a level of creepiness and authenticity to the role that is on par with Oliver McGreevy's performance in the 1972 Tales from the Crypt. So get your booby traps ready, because this Pierre Noel is straight out of hell. I just messed up their rhyme, but this Pierre Noel is straight out of hell. Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah, like, this has got a lot of positive reviews. I don't see any negative ones, honestly. Like, the lowest review is a 7 out of 10.
That's really, like, it's hard to talk about the nuances. Like, you gotta watch, like,
yeah,
the camera angles in certain scenes, or like there's one scene where, like, he's just like sitting, it looks like he's just sitting on a throne. He's just like staring for like 30 seconds. Like,
yeah,
it's hard to describe those little details.
It's,
you know,
it's for sure, like we've said, a fever dream that you need to see.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, literally, after I watched it, it did give me kind of creepy dreams. Like,
yeah, I had some creepy ones too.
Yeah, so
yeah, it probably was meant to like activate certain parts of your brain, almost. You know, like,
well, I mean, it doesn't. I mean, just letting you know, it does not influence you to want to go out and kill children or dogs or anything. So,
well, no, just that. Well, I had a weird dream about a dog, though.
Yeah,
about that, where it was my old dog who passed away last year.
Yeah,
and it was her lifeless body was just kept around, but like it never deteriorated. It was just there, like it was so disturbing.
Weird,
like it was very weird. Like, was like I kept asking why do we still have her here? It's like, oh well, we like having her around. I'm like, I know, but she's dead. Like, and like, but like it was like it was just staying there. Like it was like nothing. Like, here's not like decay. Like, it was very disturbing. So thanks, like, a lot.
I always find it weird when people do things like that with their dogs and stuff. Like, they'll actually have people that taxidermy their pets.
Well, this wasn't that. It was, yeah, it was just there. Yeah, it wasn't taxidermy. Yeah, it was. Yeah, I don't. Yeah. I'm not sure. I mean, it's a person's choice to do that if they want. But like, yeah,
yeah.
I'm not into that.
Me either. But I guess at least it's not like, you know, doing it to your mother like Norman Bates or something. But so would you recommend people watch this movie, Matt?
Yes, definitely. It's such a good movie. I mean, like, try to get a good version, because, you know, the one I watched was pretty crappy, so it kind of took away some of the, maybe yeah, some of it, or the whatever, the enthusiasm or whatever, because when I first saw it, it was actually like full screen, yeah, you know, on a TV or whatever. But I was sitting there watching it on my phone. And not only that, it was widescreen even for that, so it was like a tiny little rectangle, yeah, basically.
but that was the version they have on AMC Plus and Shudder, which is owned by AMC, so they're both, you know, there. Like, I found out if you get like basically the AMC Plus channel right now, I don't know if it's still going to be like this once this episode goes up, but they have it for 99 cents for 2 months. So like, well, I mean, it was like 99 cents each month, but so it's like $2 for 2 months. And if you have Amazon Prime, so you can get it through there, and then you get it as an Amazon Prime channel. And it also has on the AMC Plus, and they're not sponsor. I'm just saying this. You also get like Sundance Channel and IFC and Shudder all on there. And you get this movie and a bunch of other horror films on Shudder, and a bunch of like, you know, indie films on all the other channels and TV shows and stuff like that. So it's pretty cool for that. I mean, I don't know how much it is normally a month, but if it's not much, I might actually even keep it. I don't know, but we'll see. But
yes, cool.
Yeah, but yeah, I would recommend watching it, and it's definitely good. One of the weirdest Christmas movies I've ever seen in my life, if not weirdest movies I've ever seen in my life. Anyway, so just a reminder, do not drink cheer.
Yeah,
you know, don't spread joy all over your friends. Go to Apple Podcast and give us a 5-star review if you like this episode. You know, subscribe to the show so you can be up on the latest episodes. Check out our TeePublic. We got some really cool shirts there. Also, check out our Patreon if you want to help support the show. And here's something that I think people should do as a gift to your friends. Share it with them. Share an episode.
Yeah.
Be like, hey, I really like Matt and Mike. They're cool. Check this out. You know, mm-hmm. Or I really like Matt. Mike can go fuck himself, but check this out. I don't care. You know, so, but anyways, 'tis the season to be jolly. That doesn't mean you have to change your name to Jolly. And, you know, bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to All Too Real 2 Podcast, a Cullen Park production. Produced and edited by Michael E. Cullen II. Music by Matthew Hawes. Subscribe and share the show. Visit us at cullenpark.com.